He slept in his parents' bedroom until he was 13. He wet the bed until he was 14. He doesn't know how to ride a bike. Apparently, he has friends. Welcome to Socially Awkward with Evan Wexel. Wexel.
Welcome to Socially Awkward with Evan Wexel. I'm Evan Wexel, and it's a podcast where I talk to a different Facebook friend every episode. At Awkward with Evan on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, not Twitter X, but you know, and TikTok. So I have, and there's also Awkward merch, and there's my merch at funnyforevertees.com, but you'll see all that in the show notes. So my Facebook friend, I guess I recruited him to be my Facebook friend. He was posting about a movie that he produced that's now out in theaters. So I wanted to make this, you know, turn this around really quickly because, you know, movies can come and go within a few weeks. And I know there's still showtimes this weekend, so I want to get this out before the weekend. His name is Nick Smith. His movie is Snack Shack, not to be mixed up with Shake Shack, which I do many times towards the end of the interview. We're also both Theta Chi brothers. He from Arizona State. So I gave him my Arizona State story when I did a Theta Chi show there. And, but I got to just pick his brain. I got to pick the brain of, you know, technically he's a Hollywood movie producer and just his production company, how it all comes together. Yeardley Smith runs his production company. If you don't know the name, it's she's Lisa Simpson's voice from The Simpsons. So, you know, I just talked to him about all kinds of things and really just get his process and, you know, just shoot the breeze for a little bit. He's always dressed very nicely online in his social media. So it was nice to see like, oh my gosh, he's dressed like me. So, check out my talk. This is, Nick Smith, Hollywood movie producer. I'm not sugarcoating it. He's the man. Okay, I waited the whole countdown, but I think we are going for real now.
Okay. Perfect. Let's do it.
Good. So not to brag, I have a Hollywood movie producer. That's what you have to say. You just, wherever you go, what do you do? Please welcome from Los Angeles by way of Arizona State, which we're going to get into, Nick Smith. Hello, brother.
Hello, brother. How are we doing today? Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, yeah. Thanks for taking the time. I know, like, my road's getting paved. You have construction going on outside, so we're not letting the elements discourage us. I guess I interview a Facebook friend every episode, and I saw you posted in a Theta Chi group that you have a movie out. So I guess let's just play this now. This is the movie. Watch a little bit of this Red Band trailer.
Yeah, we gotta hand feed the giraffe.
Yeah, the sucker's eating right out of her palm.
You made this?
How old are you guys?
16.
Hey! You idiots are gonna end up on the side of a frickin' milk carton.
I'm grounded. No more running free range all summer. I've got 1 week to find a legit job before my mom goes full tilt DEFCON. No.
We need to back some summer jobs. You think you can hook us up?
You can ask if they need an extra hand.
With what?
That thing. Snack Shack. I think they bid it out at the city council.
Okay, so that's the Snack Shack, and that's where the magic happens. Where did this movie come from?
Man, so I guess funny enough, it was based on a true story, if you will, right? So yeah. Adam Raymeyer, the writer and director of Snack Shack, formerly wrote and directed a movie called Dinner in America, for those who saw it. And it's kind of one of those like crazy little cult niche comedies in a way. And I don't know if you had the chance to check it out at all. Have you seen Dinner in America?
I have not.
Either way, it's worth a watch. Definitely, if you liked the humor of Snack Shack, you will enjoy his previous film as well. But we knew him, from through a mutual friend who's now our agent as well, which is cool, over at Verve. They brought us a treatment together saying, hey, Adam really wants to do this movie about his childhood in Nebraska in 1991, where him and his best friend went and raised enough money through scheming around the town of Nebraska City, which you'll see some of those schemes in the movie, to ultimately get enough money to bid on the local snack shack at the pool, like it happens in the film. So it like that premise right there, all the way up to when they were serving dogs in the movie. I don't
know what it was, but like, truck dogs, it's okay.
Yeah, so the F dogs in the movie, basically they were a real thing, and it was enough authenticity where we were like, okay, there's a basis here for a really fun story about, you know, the snack shack in the summer. And we really just kind of fell in love with the concept as a production company and financier as well, to invest enough in the project to get a script done saying, hey, talk about your childhood, do the whole thing, and let's just turn this into a movie that they just don't make anymore. Right. And if you look at, you know, the beginning of the film, there's, it's got that like super bad, you know, Dazed and Confused vibe. And it was just kind of like, how can you turn now a true-ish story? And the things we could dive into that are not true down the line here in a minute. But like, how do we turn that true-ish story into something that is going to resonate with a larger audience as well? So how can you combine the two? And that's kind of where the inception of, I think, Snack Shack came from as a whole, as a movie and a script.
Yeah, look, it looked super fun. Definitely got like a little bit of Stranger Thing vibes, a little bit of the Fast Time vibes, all of that. And I think it's good. It tells you, I think, if Shohei Ohtani's interpreter has told us anything, gambling is not the answer. So you got to have an entrepreneurial spirit, even in Nebraska in the 90s.
Even if you're making billions of dollars, you still got to gamble at some point, right? I guess don't know what we learned from the Ohtani stuff, but yeah, so, I mean, I
don't know, but you know, we'll see. Right now, I know we got the brackets all starting up as we're doing this, but was your role like the production company was brought in, or was this something like you brought met up with the writer and creator? I'm always like curious about picking a brain, like what goes into like being in a production company, and then, you know, obviously who's running your production company, how you got involved with her and what's like working with her, but yeah, just enlighten me.
Yeah. So, the easiest part about this conversation is I feel like Snack Shack is really what our company is today. And I'll give you a little bit of background to like how we started. So Yardley Smith, voice of Lisa Simpson on The Simpsons I mean, 30 plus years at this point. I think it's like 35, 36 seasons at this point. And she was one of the original cast members. And it wasn't until maybe about 10 years ago when she decided to get back into, you know, production and with her business partner, Ben Cornwell. So they were the two founders of the company with really two rules, which was the first to say yes and no assholes allowed. It's on the website. you could see it. It's there. I swear it's a rule that we live by, and it's kind of helped us along the way. And, that led to a lot of development, which I'll get into, and production and financing, where we had the money to be able to go when we wanted to. So there wasn't this, you know, having to sell it to the studios and this and that, and all the hoops you got to jump through to get your movie off the ground, which is incredibly hard to do. We were spoiled enough to be able to just go, and it was awesome.
Wow.
And that led to a good track record of, you know, our first movie was a dark comedy with Michael Kelly, who was a bookie who took bets on local Little League baseball games, called All Square. You know, we went to South by Southwest, and that was a good time. And we learned how to like make movies at that point, which was great for a low budget. And I think that's really like what kicked us off to, you know, ultimately build up to what Snack Shack was. You know, we did a second film called Alone that was in 2018 and came out in 2020. Now it's magically 4 years later, the top three on Netflix, trending.
No way.
Which is like really cool to see, but you don't ever know when you start a project at the level that we do, which is sometimes a writer or a director or both bring you an idea of like, hey, I want to do this. And for a lot of production companies, you can operate in different ways. Fortunately for us, we're soup to nuts, right? It's inception all the way to distribution, which I think creators really love, because there's not a lot of people that come and muddy the process along the way, which is good. So Snack Shack specifically, like going back to what I said,
sure,
my favorite clip is today, is, you know, we want to make sure that people are paid for the things that they're doing. And in Hollywood, mm-hmm. it's a little tough sometimes where people write stuff on spec, but we were like, we love this idea. We yeah. love Adam. We love, you know, Ross, our agent, and he was a producer on Adam's last film.
Right.
So it was just good company. And we were the first ones to say yes. They were shopping it around, and we lived by our motto, and we said, let's do this project. We want to be producers on it, so let's develop it together. So that's, hey, Adam, you know, get writing. We're in it together now. And we were able to get him set up and going. And then ultimately, you know, I like to say we're in a good stage in our, you know, production company career where we have enough juice to get traction here and there. But yeah. when films are bigger and a bigger, you know, stab that you're trying to take as, you know, some of our smaller indie films, mm-hmm. We needed a partner for sure. And I think that's where T Street was somebody who had read the treatment of the script early on, which is just, you know, a one sheet that says this is what the story is going to be about.
Around where it's going to go. Okay.
They were interested in that. But they were more like, hey, let's get a script and then we'll talk. Right. So that's where we yeah. came in and said, we will deliver a script with the writer. T Street is Rian Johnson's company, you know, for Knives okay. Out, Star Wars. Like wow. they've got some big hits over there. you know, more recently, some of their smaller films that they were working on, which was Fair Play. And then ultimately American Fiction was another one. And that oh, wow. just was one of best adapted screenplay, I believe, at the Oscars. So they had a program that they were running with a company called MRC, who's more of a like a studio level financier, but also, right. You know, a production company by all means. And they had a partnership there. So we were able to then partner with T Street as two production companies, Paperclip and T Street. Presents, isn't it, in a sense, if for lack of better terms. And T Street was able to help come in and finance that and put that together through this initiative and partnership that they had done, which was, you know, which was Adam was kind of a prime target for. He had his first feature, actually two under his belt, but they felt that they wanted to invest in the future of this filmmaker specifically, like many others.
Yeah.
And the same with Cord on American Fiction, right? And they got an Oscar, you know, out of it, which was cool. So American Fiction was actually shooting at the same time as Snack Shack, and they were two of their movies in their like in their little initiative pot that they were building. And Snack Shack was one that we were summer of 2022. We're boots on the ground producers as well. So I got up from left LA, went to Nebraska City.
You filmed it there?
Filmed it in Nebraska City wow. because that's where the director was from. That's where the story took place in real life. And there's a whole, you know, thing we could talk about that in a second, but like going there was very important. And, you know, if you're a low budget producer, you're normally chasing around incentives and state tax mm-hmm. incentives. And we kind of just left that all out and said, let's be as authentic as possible. And for me, I mean, I'm from New Jersey originally, but
right.
living mm-hmm. in a city of, you know, 10 plus million, probably 12 million people, Los Angeles yeah. County, yeah. going to a town in Nebraska City of 8,000 or less was it's a culture shock. But lucky for us, the town is still kind of caught up in a little bit of a time capsule, and it feels like it's still in the 90s. So there wasn't much to do on the production design. The pool that we shot at is still the same pool from the 90s. They renovated wow. around it, but there's nothing that says this looks like 2022 or 3 or 4 right now, but like it still looked relatively the same. But the only yeah. thing we had to do, which we had to build the actual older Snack Shack and
okay.
build it at the pool. So that was kind
of, you didn't want any Apple Pay in those scenes where they're paying and holding their cell phones up to the, like,
that's we probably would have gotten, you know, a couple reviews here and there had we used Apple Pay or any technology in that sense, I think.
Right. And then let me share, we've got it. It's open last weekend. And I mean, I'm in LA, so this kind of gets you into where I live. I mean, at least my perimeter is, these are the locations right now for this weekend. So there are more, and it is everywhere. All right, this is where we take a break and I get to tell you about all the ways to support the podcast. Why have a sponsor when it's like my stuff is like the sponsor? So there's some ways you can support this podcast. Firstly, by going to patreon.com/funnyevan to be a monthly patron and support this so I can keep on filing these Facebook friends through and through every episode as my next episode after this one's actually going to be the big 150. But the biggest way to support also, besides Patreon, would be going to funnyforevertees.com. That features merch that I've been meaning to release, merch related to my comedy material. There is some separate socially awkward merch that is on its own storefront, and they all have promo codes that you will find right on the website. So definitely check that out, and check out Patreon. And let's get back to Nick Smith. I noticed, yeah, and I guess you do everything from your scouting locations, as a producer, you're like booking what you need to book or delegating to who you need to delegate when you're putting all this together and assembling a crew and just like, there is no like handbook, I guess, to being a producer. You're kind of whatever's needed.
Yeah. I say it all the time. Nobody tells you what a producer is until you're like thrown into the fire, essentially. And that's exactly like how it feels is, you know, I went to school at ASU and that was a film school, by all means, but being from New Jersey, all I knew was, oh, USC, UCLA, like try to go to LA. I wasn't smart enough for that. So I went to ASU, of course. And at the time it was a lot easier to get in. I don't know if it is now, but the film program was relatively new. There was one producing class, and I was able to get in that towards the, you know, end of my reign there at Arizona State. But my school program at one point had done an independent film where they were able to offer like a semester of credits essentially to work on a feature film. And that's where I got to learn and like go, oh, what is that person doing? What is that person doing? Where you learn the logistics of a set. And it was a, you know, a film called Car Dogs. It was Patrick J. Adams from Suits. You know, we had George Lopez, which was really cool at the time. Octavia Spencer, which was like crazy that she showed up on, you know, for a couple days. So we got to learn what that was. And then as you kind of move out to LA and start that career, you know, you learn, okay, you go on a couple sets. And then for me, logistics and planning and all that was kind of secondhand nature at that point for me from a previous career. And I just knew how to manage, you know, people and get things done. So then you kind of learn, okay, what goes into building a feature film out, right? Which is whether it's development, which we had to do on this, which was, hey, work with the writer, get the script to a place where it's presentable. And I'm lucky that our company has people that are very good at that as well. Yardley being in the biz for 30 years on one of the top running shows. You know, Jordan Foley, who's our president of production and development, he is just development heavy and he knows how to just really just drill storyline over and over and over until it's absolutely perfect, which I get to learn from as well. And Ben Cornwell. So between the four of us, it's just kicking it around to a point where we all believe in it. And then let's go get our actors. Right. And that's a big part of producing too, because you're taking a chance. And I think, you know, we saw a couple hundred tapes for all the kids. We have the three main kids in the film. And we did callbacks, which was really cool, to where we got to bring the kids back in, the ones that we loved from the tapes, to ultimately where we were able to refine it to the three kids that you see on screen today, which was Connor Sherry, who plays AJ, and he's been on a couple of TV shows prior and some projects here and there, but ultimately this is like his first big feature, so this is a big deal for him. Mika Abdallah was in another feature just prior to, and her career is starting to pop as well. And then Gabe LaBelle was the third kid. And yeah, that was a weird one because all we heard was, oh, he was in the Spielberg film, which Brother Spielberg, I think, is a thing, right? I saw somebody comment that on the page too. And I don't know what the logistics of that are, but I think he was a Theta Chi at some
point. He was at a Long Beach State.
There we go. So, so Gabe LaBelle, he's in the Spielberg movie. Like, and you don't know what that means because we don't get to see any of that footage, especially at the level that we're at. Like, no one's going to share any dailies from a Spielberg film that's coming out, which ended up being The Fablemans. I don't know if you saw that. Gabe LaBelle plays young Spielberg, like the whole movie. Wow. So he essentially starred in this massive Spielberg film, and it was just like, oh sick, like that's our guy. So he would go on press tours and kind of plug the film as well, which is cool. But yeah, and then the rest was just, hey, we have our kids, let's fill in the blanks here, fill in the blanks. And that's all part of producing as a whole. And then you get to Nebraska, and then it's finding crew, which is not very prevalent like throughout the state, because Nebraska is not.
So you wouldn't bring crew from LA, you would try to find them locally.
Yeah, there's a bit of a play there. There's some tax incentives behind it, but ultimately it's easier to have local crew there because you're paying a lot to bring people in from LA if you do. But we had our production designer, Francesca, she was able to come in from LA, and then some people were coming from Oklahoma that she knew. Mm-hmm. And because it's tough if you don't know people that you're not working with, sometimes it's harder to gain that level of trust to know that they're going to get the job done. So our DP was on Adam's last film, and he's from Canada, right? So our DP came in, and then we were able to kind of fill in underneath with either local or people that, you know, were close enough where they were able to come in. But we tried to keep it as local as possible, and that's what we do on productions, because we like to stimulate the local economies as producers, and we build teams that we just love to work with. So that is a part of it too, is building that crew. And that's what I do specifically when we get to a location. I mean, all of our films have been shot outside of California,
right?
Portland. Let's see. Well, we went to Nebraska, Louisiana, you know, all these different places we travel to, and we get to go there for months at a time. So it's cool. And then we all the way until we wrap, right? So I'm there 3 or 4 months out of my life, which is a nice switch up from time to time. But that's part of producing as well.
And the shelf life of this is like, it's out now. I mean, I think the trailer was, it had like a Paramount subtitle with it. I don't know if this is Paramount Plus is in the future of this film. And I guess this thing will kind of go on forever, because I feel like this is the kind of movie, you know, that gets passed around a lot, especially around like probably younger kids. We're like, oh, you got to see this. This is kind of fun. And I just, it has a certain timeless nature where if like you're digging for something you want to watch like that, it's a good go-to.
Yeah. It's weird, right? Cause you're replicating movies that were kind of cult classics, but when a cult classic comes out, I don't think it necessarily does anything that, that in theaters theatrically, is not this big splash. And I don't think that people, understood how things, you know, ultimately popped later down the road. It's usually word of mouth and saying, oh my God, have you seen this movie? So it's a weird model to kind of build a film on, right? Yeah, where you're like, well, we just want the lifespan to be 20 years, which is like, even though most people are like, how can we make $100 million in the box office right now, superhero movie, this or that.
But
like, this is not that thing. And when Paramount, you know, eventually was able to come on, they were even like, hey, this is, we love this movie, but like, we don't know necessarily what to do with it, at least at the time, because it's not this big studio movie. And if you put a bunch of money into it, it's made for maybe people that had certain lifestyles as kids, right? You and I might have lived way different childhoods.
Right.
Hopefully this resonates with the majority, right? And we hope that it does, because I felt my childhood was in this too. You know, I was a little schemer, of course. but then luckily Republic, who was releasing, you know, the Westerns back in the day and all these like fun, you know, newer concepts at their times, it had shut down for a little bit over the last couple of years and came back like last March. So maybe a year ago. And then Republic Pictures, which is just like a subset of Paramount, and Paper Airplane, who did like Godzilla, you know, the most recent Godzilla movies, they came together and were like, we know what to do with this. And that wasn't until the new year, right? So that was end of January, February, to where up until that point, we didn't even know what was going on with the movie. It was like, hey, let's build our trailers, let's build our posters if we can. But all of that would have been done independently, and you don't know what a studio is going to do with that after. So it would be like kind of moot if they were like, hey, that's a cool poster, but we're not going to use it. So you can't really do much until those big players come on, because then it's their game and what they feel that they can market to their audience. So we just kind of had to sit back and wait, which in the meantime, you could go and try and make other movies. And that was, you know, 2022, we finished up end of the summer. So like, it was a long waiting game. And then it was, hey, we're going to put this in 300 plus screens, you know, partner with the Alamo Draft House and this and that and AMC, oh, yeah. blah, blah, blah. And we were like, this is awesome. So it happened within a month. Like, literally, if you would ask me January 1, what was going on with your movie that you shot, I would have told you I had no idea. So, like, to know that it's March and up until the release, you know, last Friday, we ended up getting, I think, even another 60 or 70 screens. So we went 400 plus, which was just like incredible for us because everything had been super independent and streamer, you know, bound for all of our films leading up to that. Right. So it's cool to just get a theatrical release, right? Which I think is, as a producer, is always what you want and what you strive for. So it was very cool to get.
So is that what you judge, like what makes a project successful for you? Like, first, does it get in the theater, or does it need like a certain shelf life after being in the theater?
It's an interesting question. I would assume it's subjective for producers, because you just want people to see your movie. I mean, however it gets there, and to that, to some people, that might be a big Netflix movie, right?
Right.
You don't know who has what streamers these days. The streamer wars have killed off the ability to be able to afford multiple streamers, right? So, like, you don't know if somebody only has Hulu, and then they might never see your movie. I think a success for me is for my friends and family to be like, oh, this is what he's been up to, right? And understand, like, my mom and dad and saying, like, hey, I'm able to see your movie in the theater in our town, right? I think that was very cool to get to. And a theatrical release for me, for the masses to be able to see and respond to something that we had made together, I think that's a success. Now, financially, however it ends up going, like, that's one thing, and people can measure success by that.
And you may not know that right away. Like, that might take years to realize what came of it.
Yeah, 100%, right? Yeah. And down the line, who knows? You know, it could go to a streamer, where I'm guilty of it too, where I love sitting on my couch. I have a big screen TV where I can sit there. I don't need to go to the theaters, you know, and pay, you know, $100 for snacks at this point. But I do support that and go when I can, especially I think I'm going to see Snack Shack again tonight in theaters, because I just want to bring all the friends and drag people to the theaters. I'm going again. I'm going to see it again in theaters, and I want to make sure that I get everybody that experience.
Yeah.
But you don't know. Like, it could go to a platform. It's not set up for Paramount Plus at the moment. Okay. So there could be other people that come in and take it. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, we are just, you know, I think it's set early April, set to go to the platform after all the theaters have finished playing it.
Right.
And we'll hopefully hear in the next like week or two. Right. And then I can start promoting that piece of it on the Facebook pages that I was and all that. But until then, it's just get as many people to talk about it as possible. And that's kind of like the guerrilla marketing style that we're in, because we got the theaters, but until you spend millions and millions on promotions, it's hard to do. I mean, Connor Sherry, are the main actor of the film. If you go on his Instagram profile right now, he went like over the weekend or early in the week to sit in front of like Jimmy Kimmel's like studio. And he had like a big come see my movie and was like picketing in a funny way, like in a satirical way. But that was just like a way to get people to maybe pay attention to, hey, we have a movie in theaters now, because we don't have the millions to spend on that marketing. So it is me posting in those Facebook pages and telling people, and then hopefully the people who now saw it in theaters in the last week will say, hey, did you see that? And then when it gets to the platform, we can get more and more traction and go from there. But you never know, to your point. So,
and is your attention already like switching to the next thing? Like, what's the next project? What's the next picture to put together, or it's in a pile somewhere on Yeardley's desk?
Like, we have 10 to 20 projects at any given moment, I think, at this point in film, and a little bit in TV. And that's a little bit harder for us, because we've done just strictly movies at this point, and podcasts we do as well. So I think ultimately we have, you know, 3 or 4 movies at this point that we are trying to get. But that's one, keeping the company going, right? You have a company to take care of, and you can't just sit there and try and ride the success of your last film. So your survival is like, you got to keep going. You got to keep building up. So yeah, we are constantly looking for that next one, of course. But, you know, we do want to make sure that, you know, that we are taking in this success currently and feeling what the gratification of what we built up to for years to come at this point. So we're trying to sit back and relax and enjoy it, but also keep the pedal to the metal here. So
nice. And so did you go to Arizona State for film, or was that just something you stumbled into when you went there?
You know, as a kid, I was, you know, the one that was, you know, doing little projects here and there, film projects. And when they would give me the option to not write an essay in school, I would always choose to do the video companion option instead of writing essays, to a point where I was like, hey, this is fun for me. And I went to film school, but like, being in front of the camera was never a goal, and I don't want to be still. And like, directing is fun, and I enjoyed it as like a very like minor, you know, video when YouTube was like super early, and that was fun to do. But when I went to film school, I signed up and I applied for film school at ASU and gotten in, but I didn't really know what I was trying to do. And luckily at the time, there wasn't that many classes. It was, you know, film history and ethics in film and a lot of acting classes. And I was like, okay, I can take those. And we were getting more and more courses as I was at school. And I was like, oh, that seems cool. So it really just gave me the ability to find myself. But the initial goal was, and you know, as a kid, growing up at that specific time, you're watching Entourage and you're like, oh, that's sick too. and I'm not ashamed to say that. Like, I watched Entourage and I was like, that looks cool. I just want to be a part of whatever lifestyle that might be Vinny Chase, but like maybe a little bit of E or maybe a little bit of Ari or something in a non, you know, like harassment way in that case. But like, I knew that there was like a part of this industry that was still adjacent that could give me the ability to like have fun and not be in this like 9-to-5 job, and have just a fun job at the end of the day. And I think that I was very, very lucky to be able to find that. And I've done all the things that, you know, Entourage, they go to the film festivals, Sundance and Cannes and South by Southwest. And like, I've done all that like fun stuff, and it is fun. It's awesome. So I got to go to school, learn enough to get out to Los Angeles, and ultimately just hope that somebody picked me up off the curb, and Yardley and Ben, they gave me a home after I was kind of, and that first film was literally, hey, you seem like a great kid. We'll give you a chance. And then our first movie was in Baltimore, and they said, you're going to Baltimore for the summer. And I was like, okay, sign me up. And I didn't know. And then I was a co-producer on that. I didn't know what any of that meant. Really fake it till you make it. And it just I got really lucky. And I think that's a lot of people's stories out here. So,
yeah. And were other brothers in film school when you were there too, or was it really just you or just
something? There were two, but you could tell that they weren't as into it
as you were.
Film classes you could take if you were not a film major. And I think that people were like, oh, I'll watch movies for some grades. Able to then continue on. One of the brothers, his name, shout out to Kyle Nelson, he did a couple of the movies with me too. Those movies that I was talking about where the school had put up and hired, you know, professionals to kind of be the keys. And then we would be all the students filling in the positions underneath. And we did a couple of those movies together. We did Car Dogs specifically. And that was cool because, you know, it was class for us, but it was still like an absolute feature film. Every minute counted. And we were doing, 16, 18 hour days and still having to go to school and do all of the, you know, go to chapter and do all the fraternity stuff and still, you know, hold our status to where we weren't completely burnt out. So it was a challenge, but it worked out. And I was able to even get an entire semester's worth of credits on top of the semester that I was taking to where I was able to graduate early, but I still stayed in Arizona just to have a little bit of fun before I left. So
So I'm going to give you my Arizona Theta Chi story, Arizona State.
I love it.
They brought me in for a show, easy to fly from LA to Phoenix. So, you know, I forgot who I was talking to. I think this was maybe a couple years or a couple years before or after you, but they're like, great, we're going to do this show. Well, no, they set up all the chairs like on this driveway, because I guess all the places the fraternities live is like in sort of like apartments, or I don't know if it's like housing, but there's like a big parking lot in the middle, and they set up the chairs. They brought out the sound system, and I got my guitar, and I'm like, okay, great. So where do we plug in? And they're like, there's nowhere to plug in. We're in the middle of a parking lot. So there was a pool right on the side. So we hopped the pool parking lot and I ran an extension cord to some outlet at the pool and they all sat around the pool and I survived the show with them. That was pretty much my Arizona State Theta Chi story.
What year was that? What?
All right. So I'm going to have to look this up then. Hold on. We're going to my website. I'm not going to share my website, but I have an archive.
While you're looking that up, that was our house. So I'll explain. So in Arizona, there's the law where you can't have, I think, more than four people on a lease because then it's considered a brothel. Like it's an old law.
Oh, so yeah. There's been lots of those.
Yeah. No fraternity houses, no sorority houses. So ours was two apartment complexes.
Yeah. I have the date. It's March 15th, 2017.
Okay. I think I would have just left a year before.
Okay.
And there was a time where I got there 2011, I think, which is fall 2011, which is my pledge class there. Shout out F2K11.
Yeah.
And we were, I think my junior year, we were on like the classic double secret probation / kicked off.
I think you guys were okay by when I was there.
So that's what I was going to say. I was like, I think there was a little bit of a rough patch where I think it just slowly died out because we didn't have a status. Greek life was kind of being torn down at ASU to restart. And then we ultimately were able to reform a chapter right around that time, like 2015, 2016, to where there might have been a reorg, classic reorg, which I think happens to everybody at this point.
Yeah, it's
and by that point, yeah, we would have been like kind of fresh starting up. So I don't know. I'd be curious to see even how many brothers were there at that time in 2017.
I don't remember who I'm trying to dig in my emails. I can't find who it was. I had a few names, but it was okay. Yeah. It was fun. We rode around after. I stayed at a brother's house off campus. It was fine. I mean, I was there like 24 hours and then on my way.
There you go. That's all you need.
Yeah. Yeah. So this is cool. So super cool. I'm going to get back to then busy producer Hollywood lifestyle. I will say I'm in SAG. And if there's ever like a chase scene going on and the actors are, if someone needs to know a direction, I can always yell out under five. He went that way. And then that's the end. And then I can go home.
So you're only good for one line.
I have these friends, they're always like promoting about the movies they're making. I'm like, well, can I be like a background zombie or can like someone, or maybe like I'm like serving someone coffee and they knock it out of my hand and they're like, I want a decaf. And I'm like, sorry. And I just walk off and that's it. I'm not asking for too much. I've been in the union. I was on the nominating committee this year, so I had some swing randomly. But
there we go. But you're in SAG currently. Like,
oh yeah,
you have
status. I got in. Our friend was she booked something, and she had her friends all come over to the taping, and it was like a Pizza Hut commercial. And everyone that day at the taping basically got Taft Hartley'd. So that's how we got. We was like a hidden camera.
There we go.
My wife made it on camera. But I mean, I was doing like background stuff. So I understand like being on a set and seeing all that, but it was good. It's always fun to have craft services. So
that's all you can hope for, right? Is a paycheck and some pizza from time to time. But yeah, that's good. Well, it's good to know. I think there were some other, brothers that commented on the page too that are like, I'm an actor too. So if we can just get everybody in one scene together at some point.
I don't know if you've run into like Himson Chan, who was just on Curb Your Enthusiasm. He does a lot of stuff out here and it's really fun, the things he gets into. So
I would love to. I love supporting, one Theta Chi. It was such a fun time. And I even have my Arizona State hat on.
I have the license plate on my shelf.
There we go. Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, as much as I can support, who I was and who I am today, like I love doing that. New Jersey, Arizona State, Theta Chi, any of the brothers, I'm in. So.
I'm from Long Island. Where in New Jersey are you from?
So Freehold, New Jersey.
Oh, you're from Springsteen country.
So, yeah, I went to the same high school, different times, obviously, as Bruce. Yeah. The parents are still in Asbury Park. So, no, you know, Stone Pony or Springsteen.
I've been there.
You know, was coming up. That's where I go back to for the summers and get to enjoy it. And that's, I still have a lot of New Jersey pride. So I'm basically dead center, and a little bit towards the shore is where I started and where I'm at now. But I'll stay in LA for a little bit. I love the palm trees and the sun over here. So I'm not going back anytime soon.
Excellent. Yes. As long as you're near the water. Good, because then you could always swim away if things really get bad. So
exactly,
off to Hawaii. Okay, cool, man. Well, yeah, I appreciate the time. I'm glad you Theta Chi'd it up for this, because I've only seen you in like formal wear on your social media. So it's good.
That's all for the studios and this and that. But when I can be like comfortable, like I'll go bro here for the boys. That's
nice. Cool. Well, yeah. I'm gonna give the people out there Snack Shack. I keep saying, did you think I get annoying Shake Shack and freaking Snack Shack?
So we've embraced it at this point. At one point, Paramount had tweeted out the trailer, and someone from the Shake Shack Twitter had said, "Is this our origin story?" Like, as the Shake Shack origin story.
Good.
And I was like, "Please give us a sponsorship. I love Shake Shack so much." But we're okay with it. I think all the actors joke that their parents are like, "Oh, when is your Shake Shack movie coming out? You know, I can't wait." So we've embraced it. I love Shake Shack. Shake Shack over In-N-Out. I don't care if that's
okay. I've never been. I don't know if I've ever been to a Shake Shack. I'm not sure. I know In-N-Out.
I'll stand by that all day. That's gonna be controversial. Okay. People hear that.
Well, my In-N-Out hack is to always just, even if there's a long line, just walk up to the window, because then it's just like they're taking your order. As if you're in a line on a car, it's like save 20 minutes and do that. That's the way to go.
If people understood the lines out here in LA, especially, like, they'd understand how valuable that insider info is.
Right. All right, man. We're going to get people out to this Shaq movie, and maybe Shaquille O'Neal will even show up, because it's similar. So
yes, Snack Shack, Shaquille O'Neal.
He has a chain out here. I think like Big Chicken or something like that. He has his own fast food chain. Anyway,
as long as they sell the F dogs there, which will make sense when you see the movie, everyone. So go see it and then in on the joke.
Yep. Tell Yerdley I said hi. I really liked her on Herman's Head. That was
she will appreciate it. She will appreciate that. We get some Herman's Head comments where it was a little after my time, and she has to explain to me what it was.
Right.
But I will let her know. I think it's
ahead of its time now, based on the prevalence of mental health in people's minds. I think it was an interesting premise. I don't know if you knew the show. Like, basically there were four characters that were inside his head. There was like the intellect side, the lust side, and the like say whatever you want side. And I don't know, it was like compartmentalizing one's mind in Herman's mind, I guess. But it was all right. It was a fun show. It was good to see Yerdley on camera for some stuff.
Yeah, so. No, she's getting back into it too with the, you know, Simpsons is the day job at this point. And we have another movie, Possessions, coming out soon, where she will make a bigger debut for sure. So
nice.
Simpsons fans will get to see her. And the Herman's Head stuff is always funny to, because people loved it when they watched it. But I still have yet to watch the show, being a little bit after that time, but I know what you're saying.
No worries. All right, Nick, I'll let you do your thing. Paperclip Limited is the production company for all your needs. And Snack Shack is in the theaters right now, but it will be around in your streaming probably in a month or so. So there we go.
Boom. That was perfect. Okay. There it is.
All right. Snack Shack for life. All right. So that was Nick Smith breaking it down. Go see Snack Shack. It is going to be out for a few more weeks, and then actually it will come to streaming. So I'm sure you'll be able to see it. Maybe Paramount Plus, maybe not. We're not sure yet. But I also like that I got to pitch how I could be in one of his future movies. I'm not asking for too much. I just want to be like, you know, an annoyance for like 5 seconds, and then the movie can continue. So that's where we are. Thanks for checking this out. Definitely subscribe and share and write your reviews where you can write your reviews. And 5 stars are appreciated. And support the podcast. Stay awkward, because you know I will.
Thanks for listening. Go to awkwardwithevan.com to like, share, and subscribe to the podcast. Now for Evan's mom to pick out his clothes for tomorrow. See you next time on Socially Awkward with Evan Wexel.
Wexel.